Hello, and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Amidst the public uproar over the separation of immigrant families because of President Trump's zero-tolerance policy at the border, there was a notable pushback from leading airlines. United, American, Southwest, and Frontier all announced they did not want the government to use their planes to transport separated children. It's a sign of increasing corporate activism, CEOs openly taking political stands on all kinds of issues. Jerry Davis is a business and sociology professor at the University of Michigan, where he is the associate dean for business impact at Michigan Ross. Jerry, welcome.
Thanks, Cindy.
You say the political voice of corporate CEOs is growing louder. Why is that?
So I think there's a handful of things behind this. You have to remember that 20 years ago, CEOs did not become overtly political. They did not want their company to be known as a political company.
We don't want to alienate anybody.
Absolutely not. There's a famous and apocryphal quote for Michael Jordan that when he was asked, why aren't you supporting Harvey Gantt to run for Senate? He said, because Republicans buy sneakers too. And that was kind of the folklore for business, was you don't want to alienate potential clients by taking a social activist stance.
So case in point would be the famous lunch counter sit-in at Woolworth's in the 1960s. What happened there?
Yeah, it's quite a story. So people remember the lunch counter sit-ins where African Americans had to sit in a segregated part of the restaurant. Well, that was a Woolworth's. I don't know if anyone in the audience is old enough to remember Woolworth's.
Your host is. Big chain. Big chain known across the country.
Absolutely. Like Kresge, they were in towns across America, and their corporate policy was to respect the local law. And the local law in Carolina was segregated seating. And so when those brave activists sat down at the lunch counter, they were violating the local law. Woolworth's policy was obey the local custom. And so they were deeply unhappy with the lunch counter sit-in.
So basically, don't rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat.
Don't rock the boat.
Now, eventually, they had to back off, of course, because the negative publicity was too much for them. The pictures are now sort of famous around the world of what happened at that lunch counter boycott. And so the standard then was follow local norms, follow local customs. What we're seeing today is that more companies are more willing to say, actually, we are not going to go along with local customs if it violates our corporate values. If it's against who we are as a corporate citizen, we're not going to just go along.
So we saw that with these airlines just recently saying we don't want to transport these separated children.
Exactly right.
But things began to turn when?
So I would date it as at about 5 to 10 years ago. And I actually think one of the big shifts is social media. The fact that what corporations do goes viral very quickly. So Woolworths might have thought, well, we're going to have a local lunch counter sit in, but it's not really going to go anywhere. That turned out to be incorrect. The activists were quite persistent, as were their allies, and it spread and it got a lot of publicity. The usual expectation, though, is that it's going to stay local. That cannot happen anymore.
Not in the era of Twitter, Instagram, Facebook live streaming video. You have a term that I thought was really terrific, clicktivists.
Yeah.
Tell me, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so one of the early concerns raised by Malcolm Gladwell and others was that it's very easy to click like on a button or click I support this, and it doesn't really feel like you're putting your body on the line. So the concern was it's easy to pat yourself on the back and say, I was an activist today. I clicked on 5 petitions. That's not much of a form of activism. What's different now, though, is that companies can get a feel for what is the public thinking about us by the prevalence of clicktivism. Mm-hmm. If you go out on your Twitter stream and say, holy smokes, if our customers discover that we're transporting children who are separated from their parents, if this becomes a video like that man that was dragged off a United Airlines flight.
That's right, that doctor. Yes.
This is not going to end well for us. So companies are going to be a lot more in the vanguard of figuring out what's the public going to think about this. And with tools of social media, you can figure it out pretty quickly. They've got very smart people trained at schools like ours to figure out what is the public thinking about this.
You also note that millennials are making a difference both as consumers and also as employees.
That's exactly right. The first thing that companies are going to think about is how are our consumers going to take this? But an even stronger voice in the company is what do the employees think about this? Because the employees, if I ride on a United Airlines flight, I'm a customer for the hours or days, depending.
Yeah.
But if I'm an employee of that company, I have to represent it to the outside world. And if my circles and if my friends say, I can't believe that your company is doing X, you have to explain that. So imagine hypothetically you work at a university where the football team isn't doing as well as it should be. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot to do with the football team at my employer, but I do get called on it. Same kind of thing can happen to employees, that because their identity is so tied up in their employer, they want to make sure that that company's got the right values that reflect what they think.
So for a very prominent example, the Walt Disney Corporation being involved in LGBT issues. And we've seen it actually not just Walt Disney. Walmart actually kind of locked horns with state officials in Louisiana.
They did. That was quite impressive. So in the case of Walt Disney, in the 1990s, they would have a gay day at the park, and a prominent American religious denomination called a boycott. Well, I don't know if you're a parent, but if you tell your children, sorry, kids, we can't go to Walt Disney World or Disneyland, you're going to have a mess on your hand. If you tell your kids you can't go to see the latest movie made by Disney, that's just not going to stand up. So that wasn't a very effective boycott. What was intriguing about Walmart was they're not most people's ideas of a social justice warrior.
You don't see them far left.
Absolutely right. Most people think nothing represents the mainstream better than Walmart. And so it was really telling when a few years ago the Arkansas State Legislature passed a law, which they called a religious freedom law, that would allow businesses to discriminate against LGBT customers on the basis of their background. Passed a legislature, and it went to the governor for his signature, and the CEO of Walmart said, we want you to veto this bill. We know from our experience at Walmart that diversity, equity, and inclusion are really important and that we're stronger when we welcome everyone. And so we asked the governor to veto this bill. And in Arkansas, you don't say no to Walmart.
So they did that. And to the point where former Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal was so upset by this, he told companies, stop bullying. Don't turn into corporate bullies.
It was a kind of reality inversion. So a few weeks after Walmart did this, Bobby Jindal, who at that time was a presidential hopeful and governor of Louisiana, said, leftists and big corporations are ganging up to oppress religious liberty. Well, I can tell you, don't come to Louisiana, save your breath. That was sort of, I was rubbing my eyes saying, wait a minute, you're saying that Walmart is ganging up with leftists against religious freedom. That was a bit of vertigo. But companies can't really avoid this anymore. What they do becomes public. If you mistreat a worker, it's going to go viral. It's going to be on Glassdoor. People are going to know about that. You can look up, if you're interested, any individual's political contributions. If it's over a couple $100, it's public record. You can search on the web and see how much has your CEO donated to one campaign or another. And employees are going to hold them accountable for that. If they think this is really different from what I value, they might question it.
So this corporate activism predates Donald Trump entering the White House. And do you see it lasting after he leaves the White House?
Absolutely. I think this is going to last forever. I can't see an end to it. More transparency is not going to go away. And as more and more people see that they can be successful by using these tactics, one could imagine this leading to a real polarization. You could imagine there being red companies or blue companies.
Because some companies have pushed the other way. They've gone more right, haven't they, in espousing causes?
It's interesting that we haven't seen that much going in the other direction. And my own expectation would be if you hope to have millennials as consumers, you're not going to violate LGBT rights. That's just not going to be in anyone's interest. You don't want to be known as a racially biased company. You don't want to be known as something that violates the standards of sort of anyone under the age of 30 who's grown up watching Will and Grace. So you don't see a lot of companies saying, hey, we want to stand up in favor of I don't know what the issue would
be. Sure, whatever it is. But what have we seen with Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A? We've seen kind of a digging in, haven't we?
So Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A kind of go in the other direction, let's say in favor of traditional marriage, but they're both privately owned businesses. And so the owners of those businesses have a lot more discretion as the owners than you would with, say, a company traded on the stock market like Delta Airlines or General Motors or Walmart. Walmart, the family has a lot of influence, but they're still accountable to their shareholders. And privately owned businesses have a bit more discretion. It's also my understanding that for Chick-fil-A, it's the family of the founders and not the company itself that was actually taking these stances.
Where do you see this going? You mentioned this possibility of having red and blue companies. What would that mean to the country in your view?
Well, we have already to some extent sorted geographically. We've already seen red states and blue states. And if people make their choices about where to live, where to work, and where to consume on political grounds, we could really see more tribalism than we already have. That's a dark scenario, but suppose I had a reservation for Red Hen Restaurant coming up this Saturday. Do I go or do I not? That becomes in itself a political choice.
Interesting, and we'll keep an eye on how this all plays out. University of Michigan Business and Sociology Professor Jerry Davis on corporate activism. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Cynthia.